Hello, welcome to Values, Virtues, Ethics and Morality. My name is Magla Pillay, and today in the studio with me is Sister Denise, who has been practicing Raja Yoga meditation with the Brahma Kumaris for several decades. As you'll notice by the Grecian background, the format of today's show is what we call Socratic dialogue, which simply means the putting of questions to another in order to elicit a truth that is universally understandable. Sister Denise has chosen the topic today of the ethics of nonviolence, and the reason that the subject matter is of interest to us is Sister Denise has a particular interest in what she calls conventional morality. We ask that you look at your own value system, your own set of ethics and the functioning of your inner world, and ask whether it works for you, whether it's something that you feel is of use to you in today's day and age. Sister Denise, very, very warm welcome to today's show, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
What can you tell us about the ethics of nonviolence? It is not a topic that one hears at common dinner time conversation, but it is of interest to you. Why?
My feeling is that conventional ethics and morality is fundamentally punitive, and as such, it's violent.
And what makes you say that?
The foundation of ethics and morality is usually to be found in the ancient scriptures, in which you experience statements, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not this, thou shalt not that. Whenever you say not, what happens to the mind is the mind doesn't actually distinguish between positive and negative. So thou shalt not kill or thou shalt kill is the same thing in the mind. What says not is the intellect. So when you view your ethics and your ethical and moral principles on the basis of what other people are doing that's wrong, and say you shouldn't do that, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do like that, you get a whole list of things which are negative, which you then put in the mind and then say don't do that, and if you do that, we're going to do violence to you in order to make you not do that, which is completely illogical and incoherent. Because of the way the mind works, it would be better to say love, be nice, share, using a whole set of positive words, because then the mind will take those. So the idea of the ethics of nonviolence is to take principles of nonviolence, principles of love, principles of peace, principles that are very positive energies, and then to encourage people to go with that. The ethics of nonviolence means you look at nonviolence as a principle. Now, in spirituality, it is said that the ideal person is completely viceless, full of all the virtues, who belongs to the highest religion of nonviolence, and who fulfills the principles of correct conduct. So nonviolence comes in there. Nonviolence means you do no harm to any person, any animal. You do no harm to the earth, to the natural world. And I think it also means that you do not take any sorrow or take any harm from anyone. So if you build your ethics based upon this principle, then your angle is that you are looking at and seeing the world in a very positive way. The conventional ethics are seeing all the things that are wrong and saying you should not do that. But when you do that, what happens to the mind? The mind simply says, it thinks about killing, stealing, coveting, taking bribes, giving bribes, all the things you should not do. It takes it as do it, you know, which is why I think at one point you were saying that in the face of morality, we always want to break the rules and go against the morality. So I think that what we need to do is talk about and set out principles of ethics and morality in terms of what we should do rather than in terms of what we shouldn't do, and seeing the positive, seeing the pure, seeing the potential, because this is going to fill the mind of those who would do something wrong, and also fill the mind of those who would have something wrong done to them. Do you see what I mean? Which is much more powerful to remove the vibration, the feeling, and so on, of the negative, because you're operating just on the basis of defining things in positive terms.
Hmm. If one takes what you just said, and look at it from this perspective. You emphasize a lot on words, but what happens is that nonviolence is something that shows, well, it shows in words as emotional violence, but it also shows up mainly in behavior. To what extent has the words that you spoke of, and I see you mentioned passages from religious scriptures, to what extent has those words affected behavior? What is the link between the two?
I think there's a complete link. And especially the way in which the ethical and moral principles are couched, do not kill, do not steal, do not hurt people, and so on. Because if you do, then we're going to hurt you, and that will somehow make it right. Then at the same time, they say two wrongs don't make a right. You see, so it is self-defeating, self-contradictory when you analyze it deeply. You cannot make a person better by punishing them for doing something. There's no evidence of that. And if you check it, you find that violating people teaches them to violate. But if you talk to people about the good things, the pure things, the positive things, and then if a person does do something against that, and then you reinforce the positive thing, discourage the person from doing that again. This is not to harm the person. This is to reconnect the person with the positive values. And I think that would have a much more rehabilitative characteristic. The normal way in which morality and ethics are enforced is by doing to the person the very thing that they're not supposed to do.
Hmm.
Which doesn't make sense.
Hmm. Denise, we've come to a stage in humanity where violence is omnipresent. People resort to it with the greatest of ease and at an exceptionally fast speed. Can we bring humanity to a state, I don't want to use the word utopia, but a stage where people no longer use violence as a tool, as a form of communication, as a form of threat?
I think the only way that you can move to a space where there's no more violence is when violence reaches the absolute maximum. Because there's also a spiritual law that says that once something has reached its maximum, its extreme, it's only then that it stops.
Mm.
So I think that, you know, people try to eliminate violence with violence, which doesn't work. You just add to it, you know. And after the violence is over, then you have trauma to deal with, which takes years and years and is passed from generation to generation. In the meantime, you start up some more violence, so it really is unworkable.
Okay, so let's now look at an individual who recognizes within himself that he is either a propensity towards emotional violence, and by that I mean ranting and raving, or towards physically attacking his children when they misbehave, and he realizes the error of his ways. How does he go from such, an external show of violence to being somebody who's non-violence? Because from what I understand it, once the trait of anger takes a person over, it's as if that negative trait owns that person.
Exactly.
Okay, so how does he unlock himself from that and come back to a serene dad as opposed to a physically violent father?
Well, the thing that's important is to understand that this person is violent because they were severely violated as children. And so it's kind of programmed into them to do to others what was done to you. And so that's why they are treating their children in that way. And then they will have moments where they repent and regret, but then that passes and then they carry on back with the other, because they've been contaminated and damaged. So the person who was violated as a child, who when they're an adult they start violating their children, they're continuing something which was a legacy, you see, and the parent of that one, when they were a child, they were violated, and it goes back and back and back. My examination of this has stopped at war. Any time there's a war, the people who are in that war, whether they're fighters or civilians, they experience post-traumatic stress syndrome, which means that things that a person should never see or do or hear about or anything is seared into their soul, and it drives their behavior. Now, to heal not just one person from that, but thousands and thousands and thousands of people from that. I mean, take a figure. Recently I was in Russia, which happened to be the time when they were celebrating the Remembrance Day of the end of the Second World War, in which it was mentioned 37 million Russians died in that war, which was 12% of the population. Now, from a spiritual point of view, all of those people reincarnated. The Poles in Poland, 15% of the population was killed, to say nothing of those who were wounded, you see. So all these people reincarnate. Or when the war is finished, everybody says, okay, it's peacetime now, so we can all be nice to each other. Doesn't work like that. Because what happened to them, what their experience was, they're never debriefed, they're never rehabilitated. It's too much, too big to do that. So they carry it with them, and it goes into the domestic environment, you see. And so this is escalating and escalating and escalating and escalating, which is why I feel that the violence that's going on in the world today is just a very high level of escalation, and it will continue until it reaches peak, and then it will stop. And then we have to really reset ourselves as people.
And how does one go about doing that?
Well, I don't think you do that, but I think it happens to you. Mm-hmm. And here I also think is the role of God comes into this, because when things reach that degree of extreme, that causes God to be also activated in that area, and there is a direct encounter between the souls of the world and God, and they are healed from all of that by the power of God's love, God's peace, God's sweetness, which is so powerful that it makes the soul forget and lose all of that trauma. Because love is an extremely healing energy. Now, a human being cannot love to that degree, but the Supreme Being can and does, you know. Now, I think spiritual practice has a role in this, because anyone who decides, okay, I want to develop myself spiritually as far as I can, and starts to actually draw that energy of love into themselves, they can then be an instrument to spread that love and begin something of that healing process.
Mm.
Which I think is valid, even though it may be just a little, but it still has its validity.
Yeah, okay. So, as far as non-violence is concerned, if somebody is themselves non-violent, but surrounded by people who are violent, how do you manage that dynamic?
There's a story that I came to know of a cameraman from, I think it was CNN, who during the time of the war in Cambodia was covering the war and was surrounded by such extremes, severe extremes of violence, that the only way he could handle it was by becoming completely non-violent himself. And I think that's a clue to what is needed and how one would deal with it, because normally you're surrounded by violence, you instinctively react against it with violence, but that just makes it worse. So he was in this very, very extreme situation where it was just out of the question to react to it with violence. So we responded with total non-violence, went absolutely the other way, and that worked. That
okay.
enabled him to survive it.
So what you're saying is his protection was his change in attitude. How does one get to that state? Because when faced with violence, one of the initial reactions is fear, is it not? Because you fear harm or loss of life, or harm to a loved one. So how does one not come into the cycle of negative feelings that arises when surrounded by violence?
You know, a point comes where you've lost so much and so many that you also lose fear. And you move to almost a transcendent state. And when you do that, then something very different kicks in. And there is where you can just be totally the opposite of the negativity. And that's something special. But circumstances nowadays are such that it triggers that response now because it is so extreme.
Mm. And you spoke about a scenario where one loses fear, but what if one is still, what if it's a child that's surrounded by violence?
What? You know what happens to a child who's surrounded by violence?
Yeah.
Sometimes it is kind of like a safety mechanism in a child. They check out.
Mm.
Or they're pulled out by another force, another energy. You see, they don't see it. They don't know it.
Mm.
And that comes into a situation where you move out of the ordinary into the extraordinary.
Mm.
And that becomes a way that the child can survive.
I should have asked you this at the beginning, but I'll ask it now because it seems right in this context. What is your definition of violence? The ordinary definition of violence is physically attacking somebody, but I know you get emotional violence, which is a verbal attack. Do you define it differently?
I also take it on to the level of thought.
Okay.
And also, you know, when you're being very negative towards yourself, so when you're so far away from your serenity that everything about you is, you know, almost homicidal or suicidal, I think the energy of violence can go outward or inward. And there's a lot of people who feel so much anger, so much violence in themselves, and they're so afraid of hurting another person that they turn it on themselves.
Mm.
And but it doesn't really help, you know.
Mm.
One has to make it melt away, and for that you need enormous spiritual power.
Mm-hmm.
But normal people don't have that.
Mm.
And this is where again the energy of God can come in. And one of the things that we are taught in Raj Yoga is that it is a possibility, and then it becomes a responsibility, to draw into oneself so much love, so much peace, so much power, that you can actually, with your mind, go out there and bring the atmosphere and vibration of peace to ease the pain and violence that is out there in the world, and melt it.
Okay, so the answer to human violence is not human non-violence, it's divine intervention.
I think so, yes.
Okay, so you're saying that somebody who is surrounded by violence should just cause it to melt away using what technique? You gave the answer. Could you tell us how somebody does that? How the person in Cambodia got to the state? How did he take himself out of the situation so that he does not become a victim? Because I think that is what a lot of people fear as far as that is concerned. I once read that there's a country in the Middle East where practically every single citizen of that country is on Valium daily, because it's their only way of coping with the extreme violence. It's not humanly possible to handle such trauma, even though it's not happening directly to you. But could you tell us how the gentleman in the news report in Cambodia got to this state? Because it does not sound like an ordinary thing to do. There's
nothing
ordinary about
it. I think it was a very extraordinary thing, and that he moved into almost an altered state of consciousness.
How did he do that?
I don't know how, because it wasn't covered in the description, but one can assume that he had to have moved into an altered state of consciousness. He had to have surrendered his human limitations mentally, and with trust, with faith, with imagination, with different aspects of your conscious facilities, or your facilities of consciousness, to move into a completely different way of being.
Mm.
And really transcend the limitations of the human condition. And I think that it's connected with very extreme situations.
Mm.
That when things reach an extreme, it finishes and some other thing comes in which is totally the opposite.
Mm.
And he may have been part of that.
Mm. The feeling of rage and violent behavior in any deeply entrenched habit is that the moment there's a trigger, it takes a few milliseconds before you go from a normal state, not sure what that word means anymore, to extreme rage. If somebody is determined to no longer be a violent person, what contract must he have with himself that he doesn't feed his darkness?
He has to go and be in contact with his demons, with his original pain, so that he can develop the capacity to, you know, kind of expand himself enough to be able to cope with that so that it doesn't take him over. That is also a form of spiritual power.
Okay, you said that in one line. I think we needed an entire show just on just that subject. But
well, there are spiritual powers.
Okay.
And these are developed slowly over time. There has to be regular and consistent meditation, and you have to deal with these waves of really negative energy coming up, and you have to practice to hold it and then let it subside again without it bursting out.
Okay, so it's doable. Somebody can move from violence to non-violence. It's usually transition from the other way around. It's very rare to see somebody come back from that. Normally, if somebody becomes violent, what happens over time is that they become more violent.
Of course.
Okay.
But if you want to come back from being violent, you probably wouldn't start that until you became really very violent and you shocked yourself and horrified yourself, because something has to happen for a person to say, what am I doing?
Sister Denise, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been an exceptionally informative talk. Sister Denise has shared that when it comes to the question of nonviolence, it is possible to, even if you were a violent person, to come back to nonviolence using spiritual principles. And she also stated that if you're a nonviolent person but surrounded by violence, you can also use spiritual principles to protect yourself and your loved ones, which is a very powerful message. What I like most about what she's shared is that if you find that you have a violent personality, it does not mean that you are doomed to be that forever. If you want to change, you still can come back to a sense of normality. In other words, rebuild your conscience to that extent. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for joining us today. Good day.